Good morning. This is Byron Salvatse. Thank you for joining me this morning. I was invited to play DJ for a day on KSJE 90.9 FM. So thank you so much for joining me. I am very new to radio. Actually, I have done shows before as an interviewee. So this is my first time as an interviewer. So I'm very excited for that. Again, thank you for joining me. I also want to say Yate Abine. In Navajo, that means good morning. And then as well, my name in Navajo, Byron Atahpite. So I get a lot of questions about the pronunciation of my name. And really, it's just Byron Salvatse. And I include my first name because often people will get the first name wrong, as easy as it sounds. I'm called almost on a daily basis Brian. So that's just something I've gotten used to. Actually, this morning, I was treating a friend to coffee at Starbucks, and they ask your name there, as I'm sure you all are aware, and they called me by Brian. And so I'm always very confused, and is that my coffee, or is there someone here named Brian that I'm going to be taking their coffee? So I always have to look at the little label. So I pronounce both names, or at least I like to say both names so people will know how to pronounce it. Anyway, that said, I have a very exciting morning and a very exciting lineup for you. I have three special guests. The first one will be Ayla Quinn, who is a producer at Industry Index in New York City. Actually in Brooklyn in New York City. So she'll be calling in and joining us. She went to school in the Four Corners area, so she's very familiar with living in the Four Corners. And she, about 2 years ago, she moved to New York City and started her career there. And prior to that, she was editor-in-chief, or served as editor-in-chief for Fort Lewis College's magazine. So she took that experience in working here, also for a regional news outlet, and launched a career in New York City, where, as mentioned, she's currently working as a producer. So we'll talk to her a little bit about her experiences going from the Four Corners all the way to New York City, and what her experience is like in the city. And then another guest I'm going to have is Megan Tom. Megan Tom is a senior student at Arizona State University, and we're going to be talking to her about student-led initiatives, student-led organizations that are comprised of Native American students or Native American people, and their influence on the institution, why they're important to have in college campuses, but as well their influence on the larger communities as well as tribal communities, so that includes reservations. So we're going to talk to her about that. And then finally, my final guest will be Noelle Altaha. Noelle Altaha works for the New York City American Indian Community House, and she does quite a lot in regards to oppressive monuments, which, in simple terms, things like the Christopher Columbus statue that exists, you know, in some towns as well as some cities. So we're going to talk about those statues and why we feel like it's important for those to be removed based off of, you know, what they represent. So she'll be our final interview for the day. So some really exciting topics, and I'll try to keep it fun as well and share some fun things here and there so it's not just a serious show. So joining us this morning is Ayla Quinn. And Ayla Quinn is joining us from New York City, and she is a producer at Industry Index. So welcome, Ayla.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Byron. It's nice to talk with you.
Thanks. Thanks for joining us. So what is the weather like in New York City today? Because I understand you're joining us from Dumbo in Brooklyn. Is that correct?
Yes. So I am calling in from Dumbo, right by the water under the Brooklyn Bridge, the Manhattan Bridge. Uh-huh. I live in Manhattan, so I have to cross, you know, under the water. The weather, it started rainy, but I think it's, you know, going to be nicer today, maybe in the 60s. But it's definitely cooling off here in the city, uh-huh, which is nice for my Colorado blood that is cooling down from the humidity that is the summer in New York.
Oh, nice. And also it's going to be, I mean, Christmas lights already went up. I know they set up the Rockefeller Christmas tree, and right now they're in the stages of making it look really pretty, and they're adding branches and stuff. So it would be nice to have that cold air to come along with it, right? Because they open up the ice rinks pretty early. And so it's kind of odd to go to the, you know, the skating rink when you know it's still kind of warm out. So it'd be nice to have
Absolutely.
Some of that. Yeah, some of that cold weather in the city, right? To go along with the whole vibe of it being Christmassy.
Yeah, the ice rinks were up, I feel like, by Halloween. And I live in Midtown, so it's really nice seeing the evolution of Christmas decorations. You know, being born in December, it always gives me, you know, my birthday holiday spirit. So it was nice seeing all the lights go up. And the lights stay on 24/7, regardless if it's noon, the Christmas lights from the Rockefeller tree to anywhere by Grand Central are on 24/7.
Oh my goodness.
It's nice.
Yeah. It's just always a shiny, sparkly city.
Exactly.
So we'll go into some questions. Again, I mentioned that you are a producer now in New York City. So why don't you first tell us a little bit about yourself from when you used to live in the Four Corners area? So you were a college student at Fort Lewis College at the same time I was. And actually the same time I was serving on student government, you were serving as editor-in-chief for the Indy, or the Independent, which is Fort Lewis College's student publication for news. So why don't you talk a little bit about that experience and what you did while you were a student here?
Absolutely. So when I was a student at Fort Lewis College, I worked my way up for the Independent, starting from a reporter to online manager and then editor-in-chief, so pretty much spending, you know, 3 of my 4 years working for the Indy, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great experience from managering and getting experience of, because that's what a producer essentially is a manager, and what that looks like when you're producing public-facing content.
Uh-huh.
So that was a fantastic experience. I loved it so much. And even, you know, following the Indy now, it's great to see how it's growing and getting more video and digital.
Uh-huh.
So that's wonderful. And then after graduating from Fort Lewis in 2014, which seems like years ago, but it wasn't, I started working at Valentine Communications, so the parent company of the Durango Herald and the Cortez Journal and a bunch of other publications in the Four Corners, and I helped spear and start FourCornersTV.com, which was their video online publication. There was 100% video content, and I was a video producer there for 2 years.
Nice.
Covering Durango, Farmington, Aztec, Cortez, Bayfield, all of the cities that are around Durango, even though I was based there.
Uh-huh.
So that was my experience before I moved to New York City.
Nice.
Which was amazing. And then now I work with Industry Index. We are a market intelligence company focused on advertising tech and marketing tech.
Okay.
We call it Mad Tech. So beyond making sense of this very dense technology industry as a producer, I run their monthly roundtables events when we dive into education and engagement of different topics. And I write their blogs, I do their video content that then lives on all of our social media channels and our website and YouTube. I also help produce when we do larger conferences. I just got back from Germany where we joined the conference de Mexico.
Uh-huh.
So I did their outward-facing, you know, surveys, and we worked with Exchange Wire, which is a leading publication in London. So I pretty much summarize it as community outreach, which 100% is up my alley.
Sure.
And it's been fantastic.
Nice. That's very exciting. And looking at, you know, how, you know, as the way that I look at it, because it's a lot similar to, you know, my experience, because I was a Fort Lewis College student too, is, you know, you really, you know, laid a foundation for, you know, your career, as most students do in college. You know, they lay a foundation kind of within a community that is close to home, or perhaps, you know, on a smaller scale. And then, you know, they, once laying that foundation, they see opportunity to, you know, move further into a career. And perhaps that might mean moving to a large city like New York City, or it might be, you know, staying local and just moving, you know, up within the, you know, career world. So that's very exciting to go from, you know, a place like Durango, Colorado, laying a very solid foundation for a career there, and then going to New York City and having really good, you know, opportunity there for, you know, your career, and then having connections to, you know, really different places and organizations and people around the world. You mentioned your trip to Germany, and then your connections, you know, via Mexico and then London. I think that's very important, you know, and I think that oftentimes, you know, students here in the Four Corners area might get stuck in, you know, sort of a Four Corners bubble. And, you know, there is definitely opportunity for them to really, you know, have that reach into the world through, you know, their education, you know, pursuits, professional pursuits and things like that. So it's definitely nice to hear that from you. And I mentioned
Absolutely.
This earlier.
And
oh, go ahead.
Excuse me.
No, sorry.
I mean, I was just going to say, going to Fort Lewis, 4,000 plus liberal arts college really lets you become the professional, the person that you are meant to be. It gives you the opportunity to have real world experience, either working on the independent, on the student run publication, to then launch the start of my career as the newspaper at Valentine Communications. It just really allows you to. And, you know, sometimes there's this misnomer of, you go to a smaller college in the Four Corners, like, how do you make that jump to
Sure.
a large city, regardless if it's New York, LA, Denver? And it's possible, because
Uh-huh.
you get to be yourself and your person, and,
Uh-huh.
you know, gain experiences that I don't think you could have necessarily
Sure.
in other places. But also you make what you want to make out of it. I'm a believer in that. You know, you just do. And that's 100% what I did at my time at Fort Lewis. And,
uh-huh.
you know, Miss Durango every day. And just the camaraderie of the Four Corners area is unlike anywhere else in
Sure.
the world.
Of course, I agree with that completely. And, you know, the college that we are at now, San Juan College in Farmington, New Mexico, you know, is very similar to Fort Lewis College in ways, you know, in that, you know, we're both, you know, within the Four Corners area. You know, we have similar kind of student populations. Fort Lewis has about a third of their students are Native American. And then here at San Juan College as well, you know, about a third of our students are Native American, being that we're so close to a lot of Native American communities. So there's quite a lot of similarities that, you know, students have at Fort Lewis College and that they do have here. And because we're a community college, and Fort Lewis College being in such close proximity, a lot of our students continue their education after they get their associate's degree here. So whatever they study here, they take on to either go to Fort Lewis College or a surrounding, you know, university or college. Thanks for sharing that experience. And then something I want to make mention of that I thought was really fun, and you kind of hinted at this earlier, is you work at Industry Index, which we talked about was in Dumbo, Brooklyn. And if you're familiar with New York City, you can kind of put this into perspective. But if not, I'll try to explain it in a way that gives some perspective. But something that when I lived in New York City, something that I didn't really realize is that Dumbo was an acronym. So I always used to understand, like, I thought it was just a name of that area in Brooklyn, Dumbo, you know, so I kind of just went with it. But it wasn't until I actually got a job out in Dumbo. I was working at the West Elm Market, so right there, really, really close to the water. And
you're
it
my
wasn't
neighbor.
Until,
it's diagonal
yeah.
from my office.
Yeah, in such a beautiful area of Brooklyn. So what the acronym is, so Dumbo is down, so it's D-U-M-B-O. So it's the acronym is for Down Under the Manhattan Bridge Overpass. So that was something that, you know, like when I heard it, it was almost like a very like eye-opening thing to me, because I was like, oh my God, like how did I not know that, you know? And there are other things too
Absolutely.
To New York City, like, you know, like how there is Soho and... Soho is like what, south of Houston Street?
South of Houston, NoHo is north of Houston, Tie-Dye is the financial district. I mean, I didn't know the acronym for Dumbo either until I worked there, and it was, like you said, I was like, well, that makes total sense. And Dumbo is really interesting. If you're interested in technology, you know, either a student at San Juan or Fort Lewis, there's so many, so I mean, that's like the hub of technology. There's the Technology College, just up the road from my office, and it's just, it's really interesting that how much tech is just exploding in this area.
Sure. Of course. And thinking about, you know, my experiences as well, you know, I'm very thankful for the, you know, the experiences that I have had in New York City. Now I've been living in the Four Corners for almost a year, living back in the Four Corners, I should say. So, coming back from New York City, you know, to a place like here, I'm very thankful to have had those experiences, you know, being in New York and attending New York University. So, you know, now when I come back to visit, it's a very special and fun time for me. But I'm also very happy to be coming up on my, as I'm calling it, my 1 year workiversary here at San Juan College. So December 1st will be a full year that I had not been living in New York City and that I've been back. So I'm very excited about that to celebrate my 1 year here. So anyway, thank you. Anyway, we are coming up kind of up on time. So I do want to move into kind of any final words, or I do want to ask you, Ayla, what advice or, you know, what information would you like to give, you know, any of our college students or community members of Farmington if they're, you know, aiming to really, you know, do something, you know, if they're aiming for advancement within their career? And again, that may, you know, involve moving to a large city or moving somewhere else, or, you know, perhaps expanding on, you know, the professional opportunities that they have here in the Four Corners area. So what advice would you give people who might have those aims?
Definitely. I mean, I think whenever you're making a change in your life, regardless if it's to New York or any city, like I said, I read this article before I moved to the city. I'm coming up on my one and a half year nice. Cityversary. But from making new friends to going on job interviews and everything in between, the first year you have to say yes. You have to say yes to everything. You have to put yourself out there so you truly are getting the full experience. And then my second advice, which I learned firsthand, is networking. We live in such a digital world that mm-hmm. you think you can sit behind a computer, apply for all these jobs on all these job boards and websites, and you really think you're getting your resume out there. Uh-huh. And I was kind of hitting a wall and didn't fully understand. And when I started going to network and building the people I knew, both in marketing, you know, production, tech, that's where I really started to, you know, get interviews and get job opportunities. So I know people are like, it's who you know.
Right.
And it really is. I mean, you, of course, you know, getting face-to-face and showing your personality and your skill set, like, in a real-world computer screen is my biggest advice for anybody, any student in general, regardless of where they're getting a job from, big city, little city, whatever. You just need to network and you need uh-huh. to build your portfolio
for sure
as well, and just make your dreams happen. Never let your dreams say no on you. Trials and tribulations make you stronger. And don't be afraid to have more than one job. I mean, I think that's definitely a New York fact, because uh-huh. you just have to hustle, but, you know, your hustle will make you stronger.
Right. And I was reading an article recently about how people today, so young professionals, are the average time for them to be in a specific job, so a certain job, is really only about a year. So that compared to decades ago, so let's say, I don't know, the 70s, 80s, people were staying within one job for years, so even a decade before they moved on to another position. So it's definitely changed, you know, within, you know, looking at careers now, that people will only stay in a position for about a year, at least young professionals, before moving on to the next opportunity. And that's just kind of the culture, you know, that exists now in the career world, I feel like. So for sure. It's definitely
And it's very interesting. Like, and if you the time to, you know, if your first job out of college or your second job isn't what you want, you know, don't settle also, because exactly what you said, I had the mindset that your first job is going to be your end job and that's how you're going to retire, you know, like my parents did. That's just a career, but you can make your career, and the more people you make it, you know, explore. The world is large. But also, being in the four corners, you know, take time. Like, after college, really learn who you are as a professional. I mean, those 2 years in Durango after I graduated were, I wouldn't change it at all. It's like, learn how to not be a college student. You know, learn how to not be in school before you make this, you know, huge move or, you know, huge job change.
Right.
So that's also a huge advice I would offer to all of the students and community members.
Sure, sure. Thank you so much, Ayla. I really appreciate your time and for joining us this morning all the way from Dumbo in Brooklyn in New York City.
Thank you very much. And hopefully you're making another trip down here soon. And if not, hopefully I'm making another trip to Durango in the near future. Thanks so much for having me.
That was Ayla Quinn we were talking to, a producer for Industry Index in New York City. Coming up, we're going to be talking to Megan Tom about Indigenous student entities and institutions of higher education. But before we jump to that, I want to give some quick shout-outs. I mentioned on my Facebook page that I would be giving some people some shout-outs that are tuning into the radio show today. So first off, I want to give a shout-out to my good friend Justin Bobby, who is listening from Astoria, New York. Hi, Justin. And then Julie, who is listening from Arvada, Colorado, which is pronounced Arvada and not Arvada. I made that mistake before. And then as well, my friend Chris, listening from just outside of Boston. Hi, Chris. I hope you're doing well. That said, we are going to go into our next interview. Well, my next interview. I was very happy that she accepted this interview because I just really admire all of the work that she's doing. I met her over the summer at a conference by the College Board, and it was a Native American, focused on Native American student affairs professionals. So it was really great meeting her there, and I was very happy again that she accepted my offer to be interviewed. So, as mentioned, I'm going to be talking to Megan Tom, who is a student, a senior actually, at Arizona State University, and she is studying English literature and public policy. Megan also serves as the junior research scholar for the ASU Center of Indian Education. Welcome, Megan.
Hi, Byron. Thanks for having me.
Of course, you're welcome. Thank you.
I'll just provide my traditional introduction. So Yat'e Sha'e Megan Tom Yunishya Set Najini Nishle Dona Kadine E Bashishin Sentukine E Dashache Nana Hasane De Nasha Kade Hosto De Shogun Arizona State University De Inishtra Belaganabazad Do Public Policy Ba Inishtra Shema E Martha Bie Do Shija'e E Charlie Bie Wolye Shadeja A. Kalsibige. So I just shared my Navajo introduction, and I am Blackstreet Clan, born for the Mexican Navajo people. Uh-huh. And my maternal clan is the Cliff Dwellers Clan. And I hail from Cameron, Arizona, a small town, probably 40, 50 minutes away from Flagstaff, Arizona, north of Flagstaff, Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And I study at Arizona State University, English literature and public policy. And I have my mom and my dad with me in Phoenix, as well as my younger sister, Kelsey.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that. Cool. It's always nice to have family close by, right?
Definitely.
Okay, cool. So we're going to go ahead and jump right into it. So we have more time to talk about, you know, what it is that we really want to talk about. And I know we kind of selected the topic together. And, you know, as someone who works in higher education, I think that this is a very important topic. And, you know, sometimes it's often, you know, underrepresented, I think, or, you know, unheard in campus communities. So the topic that we have chosen is Indigenous student entities at institutions of higher education. communication, and I'll have Megan explain that a little further. But also, we're going to be talking about how these student entities influence the institution, so essentially the campus community, how they impact tribal communities, and then as well larger surrounding communities. So, Megan, why don't you explain to us a little more about what Indigenous student entities are?
Sure. So for me, I, in my experience of working with student entities on campus, previously I worked as the American Indian Council president at Arizona State University. And this was actually a coalition, one of the seven identity-based coalitions that the institution has for American Indian students. And what this entity does is sort of serve as the bridge or sort of the vocalizer for 13 student organizations that we have on this at this institution.
Okay.
To basically speak for students as well as bring issues up to not only administration but the student body and
sure.
work on ways that they can help in alleviating those issues or even finding a solution.
Okay.
So. We really worked in providing that. And the reason why I use student entities is as I travel about the nation and everywhere else, they call them different things. They call them clubs, organizations, councils, governments. So I just want to be mindful of that and
sure.
make sure that I'm not just saying councils or anything. But that's,
right.
that's sort of what I mean
uh-huh.
On the student side, but also on the, I guess, staff and things that are already carved out within the institution for American Indian students, I refer to them also as am including centers, support services, offices, and just spaces for American Indian students. So these are sort of the entities that I see throughout the nation, as well as being advocated for by Native students.
Uh-huh.
And these sort of look like places, or these sort of look like pieces of the institution that advocate for and organize Native American Heritage Month,
right.
Indigenous Peoples Day,
uh-huh.
but also serve as sort of that bridge or that guide to administrators, staff, and educators on how they can best teach or even learn more about Native or Indigenous identities. So I really see them as important to
uh-huh.
the campus and how even the institution begins to understand Native and Indigenous identities. So
of course,
for students to play into that, I really want to make sure that they're supported as much as they need to be, as well as called for when it comes time to maybe address a certain issue like Standing Rock.
Uh-huh.
I know a lot of students were called upon to sort of get their opinions about what Standing Rock meant to a lot of people, as
right.
well as what it meant to them personally as they were students of the institution.
Right. And that's very important work. And, you know, again, I work in higher education as well. And, you know, a lot of what my work entails is really elevating, you know, the voices of our students. And I work primarily with Native American students. I work here at San Juan College in the Native American Center. So a lot of the work mm-hmm. that I do is along the lines of, you know, a lot of what you just talked about and, you know, Native American Heritage Month events, Indigenous Peoples Day, or national, you know, initiatives or things that are going on that impact Native American people. Those are very important, you know, events as well as, you know, issues sometimes that need to be addressed by, you know, our Native students. And usually it's, you know, sometimes our Native students in college that are leading the dialogue on a lot of those initiatives and causes. So I think that's very important, and I agree. So thank you very much for explaining that, student and Indigenous student entities. Why don't you go ahead and give an example of one of these, like what might one of these organizations or entities do? What could a name be for one in particular, or why don't you just highlight one in particular for us?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll use my own as an example at my institution, the American Indian Council. So, what this council does is basically sit on a on the board with seven other entities. But the coolest thing that I think that they do is prepare Native students in not only leadership capacities, but community capacities.
Okay.
To sort of help out with any of the things that are happening within the community, but also to help in addressing certain things on campus, and also helping with providing an intersectional approach to the way issues are facing not only Native people, but people in such as the LGBTQ community,
sure.
people within the Black African community, people uh-huh. within many different communities. And it's really cool to see that happen. I'll take the example of Indigenous Peoples Day. When that effort was being considered the year before I came to become the president of the American Indian Council, there was sort of talks amongst the Native community trying to see like whether other identity-based coalitions understood.
Uh-huh.
So that sort of equated to more education, not only about ourselves, but about the Indigenous components that lie within the Hispanic community, the Black community, as well as the international community. So that was really cool to sort of see people realize, like, okay, like, if you go around the world, you're going to see Indigenous people. Well, you're going to hear about Indigenous people, and it's
for sure.
your responsibility to sort of acknowledge that as part of how you go about the world. So as Indigenous Peoples Day gained support through those conversations, we began to see that even this initiative was being led to conversations with the student government. And student government consists of people who maybe do identify with those underrepresented populations, but they also identify as people who are from Arizona.
Uh-huh.
So having that sort of understanding that these people are going to be leaders eventually,
right.
Within the state of Arizona, they're going to need to understand what Indigenous identity as well as Native identity means to the students here who are also from Arizona. So
right.
Indigenous Peoples Day enwraps in that idea of, okay, like we're acknowledging Indigenous identity worldwide, but we're also acknowledging it here in Arizona,
uh-huh.
was very cool for us because then we build those relationships. And for Native people, relationships are extremely important
uh-huh.
In
for sure.
not only providing people that sort of like, hey, I know that person in like a city council meeting or something like that, but also understanding where they come from, what they go through on a daily basis, and also where they want to be in the future. So
right.
Indigenous Peoples Day was not just an effort on American Indian students, but also an effort that they were able to teach non-Native people about what exactly Indigenous identity meant in the modern context
right.
and how it relates to them in policies and in laws and how the socioeconomic, I guess, success of the state work.
Uh-huh.
Because when you have one group failing, then that, you know, is a domino effect for a lot of things. So Indigenous Peoples Day, I think, is a really great example of the ways that student organizations and Indigenous student identity entities basically work to help bridge that gap of knowledge, but also to make things better for the future.
Right.
And they may not realize it right away, but eventually, these students will grow up and realize, like, okay, like, I did this. Like, people understand Indigenous identity. So that's an example.
Right. It's a lot about empowerment, right? You know, it's empowering our up-and-coming, Native scholars, as well as, just young Native professionals. I think of it a lot as, really them developing, their passion and then applying it to, things that really matter to, their home communities and their tribal communities. So, I think that mm-hmm. a lot of that work that is done through, these entities kind of prepares them for, work to continue being done once they enter, you know, the career world, as they say, you know, once they enter professional positions. So that's very important. And especially if they return to their, you know, their home communities or the reservations mm-hmm. that they're from, it's really important for them to bring, you know, a lot of what they've learned, what they have developed and or initiated through, you know, their work in college and then as well through these entities. And it's important for people who work in higher education to appreciate that and, you know, to really help grow a lot of that opportunity for our Native students and really help them develop that. So when our young Native scholars, you know, are taking all of this information, all of these experiences out into the world, they can, you know, do so in, you know, really valid ways or really strong ways, I should say. And they should, they you know, they also have that opportunity to feel empowered because, you know, in some realities, actually, you know, in a large reality, a lot of Native American students don't have the opportunity to get a college degree. So it's really important that we're showing, you know, that, hey, not only can you get a college degree, but you can come here and you can be involved in all of these things and you know, really make the most out of your college experience. So for sure, thank you so much for sharing that. And I know you all just also celebrated Rock Your Mocs, right, a couple of days ago at right, Arizona State. Right. So was it nice seeing a bunch of moccasins around ASU's campus?
I'm mostly in my office, but yes, I saw, from what I saw in my office, a lot of people were rocking their mocks. A lot of people were rocking their mocks in their minds. and they were also, you know, just acknowledging it on social media. But from what I saw, yeah, it was incredible. And it just shows, a lot of people still are tied to their traditions. And down here in Arizona, we are at ASU. We're on the traditional homelands of the Akmal, Atham, and Pipash peoples. Right. And actually, they don't wear moccasins. They wear sandals.
Right.
They were rocking their sandals. So I think we need to change that slogan a little bit.
Rock
your sandals. So.
It's important to look at the diversity that exists among Native people, right? Because, you know, we often say one thing and then kind of assume it to be true for all Native American or even Indigenous people. But it's really important to kind of look at that at a lot closer and understand that there is great diversity that exists among our Native people. So with that, Megan, any final messages message that you would like to send out to our listeners? It looks like we're coming up on time. So I'll go ahead and give you the mic back and allow you to state your final message.
Yeah, I really do want to echo sort of something that I heard with the Obama Foundation. There's a training this past weekend in Tempe, and what we were echoing is sort of this idea of civic engagement. And civic engagement for me, as I understand it, within policy and law, and also within the identity of city councils and everything, is to see something, identify a problem, and then start to work towards a solution and be mindful in how you're helping people. But I really do understand that to be an Indigenous indigenous thought, because I was thinking about it, and if I were to ask my grandmother, how would you define or how would you translate civic engagement? She would probably say, it's up to you, or something like that, to that degree. Because with a lot of times when I see student leaders or people who want to get involved with student entities, consider how they can get involved. The number one thing that I hear is, I'm not a leader. I don't know how to lead. But from reflecting on either your grandma's teachings or even the teachings that you see within the elders within your community, that is grounded in what we know. We're already leaders in our own capacities as students, but also if we take that extra step. So if your voice shakes, if you shake while you're talking, it's totally fine, just as long as you're doing something. So really, I want to echo that message that my grandmother taught me. It's up to you. If you see a problem within your community, definitely try to do something. Try to minimize it into a problem or into a solution or step that you can you can help them better that. Because Obama says the same thing, but in a different way. and we all see leaders who say things in a different way.
Right.
So definitely listen to grandma.
Of course. Thank you so much, Megan Tom, a student at Arizona State University. I really appreciate you calling in and, you know, talking about, you know, Indigenous student entity is a very important topic in higher education. So once again, thank you so much.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
That was Megan Tom from Arizona State University talking from her voice as a student there. So we definitely appreciate her taking the time out of her day to join us for that. Next up, we have Noelle Altaha. Noelle is originally from Arizona and is currently living in New York City. She is White Mountain Apache. So she's from an Apache tribe in Arizona. She went to college at Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado. So moved into the Four Corners area for a little bit, and then she headed out to New York City to pursue graduate studies at Columbia University, where she's now moved into a professional position and does a lot of great work in New York City. So welcome, Noelle.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course, you're very welcome. So what I'm going to go ahead and allow you to introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll go ahead and jump into our topic. So why don't you give us an introduction?
Sure. Hi, I'm Noelle. I'm a White Mountain Apache and from the Eagle Clan, born of the Whitewater people. And I am from White River, Arizona, and I'm happy to be here.
Great. Thank you so much. And that's beautiful. I love incorporating Native American languages into, you know, a lot of, you know, what we do. So, you know, having it on radio and having it air and having that, you know, that voice within, you know, your native language, I think is very important. So thank you for that. So what we're going to be sharing or what we're going to be talking about today, something that we selected together is oppressive monuments in large cities. So particularly New York City. And one thing in particular we're going to be talking about is Christopher Columbus statues and, you know, what they represent and how Native American people feel about, or even Indigenous people feel about that sort of representation. And then as well, we'll kind of focus on some of the work that you're doing with the American Indian Community House in New York City. So why don't you tell us about, starting off with that, you know, what it is, you know, your role is and as well what you do.
Sure. So my recent experience is focusing on the Indigenous community that I've been humbly welcomed into here out here in New York City. I live in Brooklyn, and you know, after the Charlottesville attack by the quote alt-right and white nationalists and terrorist groups, the nation really looked at a lot of its oppressive monuments and hateful monuments.
Uh-huh.
To make a long story short, the mayor of New York City called for a commission of folks, professionals, experts, artists to
right.
look at any oppressive, hateful groups within New York City, and
uh-huh.
of those, it would include Christopher Columbus. There are five monuments in New York City across all of the five boroughs.
Wow, I didn't know that, and I lived in New York City. And
right.
I know, yes. I know the main one that everyone knows is Columbus Circle, because that's, you know, a large, you know, attraction, or at least
it
becomes
is.
Very touristy, right? And it kind of is positioned in a very, you know, in a way that you can't miss it. But why don't you tell us about, you know, where, you know, some of those monuments and kind of how they exist, and again, what your work is doing to the movement around that.
Sure. So the monuments are symbolisms of conquest from the perspective of any Indigenous person from the Western Hemisphere. This is a monument of not of pride for the Italian American, and this is not an anti-Italian American stance. It's actually, to be accurate in history, is our right as American citizens to know really the history and to reconcile that. And a lot of Native peoples and Indigenous peoples and our allies with Black Lives Matter and even Italian American allies agree that these need to be questioned, these monuments need to be talked about in an open manner, and we need to find a more appropriate space for this and not in a public setting. So there's talk about, should we put them in museums for the Italian American community? Should we destroy it completely as a way to heal from historical trauma?
Right.
Those are some of the questions on the table, but I think the important thing is to recognize the ways in which history is taught from the lens of the those with power. The way that history is shaped really is not accurate, and it's not okay to uphold things that are not factually accurate. So that's what our work has been on as far as advocacy and connecting the dots for people and really educating everyone, including our own communities, as far as what symbolisms mean, what the ways in which, like, the rhetoric and understandings of art and public space, what they mean for us to navigate these spaces as Natives and also as Americans. So.
Got it. Well, thank you. Thank you for that information. So then where does the what is the, you know, kind of the status now of the commission? I mean, given that, you know, just a couple of months ago, well, last month in October, you know, we were celebrating and recognizing Indigenous Peoples Day. And I know you were very involved in, you know, some events and activities that were taking place on Indigenous Peoples Day. So, you know, kind of given that, you know, how New York City experienced that, and then as well, what are some current or future plans for that commission?
Sure. So New York City is a little bit behind as far as the rest of the more progressive or aware cities like Los Angeles and the Pacific Northwest. New York City has a ways to go, but that doesn't mean that our voices aren't being heard. So we have a Indigenous Peoples Day powwow celebration on Randall's Island every year. And then this year we did a protest and we got a good coverage by the media. And we are still focusing on celebrating our existence, mourning the loss of the cultures and languages and the land that was lost to Native peoples. But I support, like, this community in New York City, as well as the community that I called home, which is, Durango, Colorado, very close to you out there in Farmington, New Mexico. And Fort Lewis has been ahead of the game as far as celebrating and uplifting all of the other narratives of the first peoples of the Western Hemisphere, because we know that history doesn't start in 1492. There's so much more other stories that are so vibrant and still alive and still practiced.
Right.
So we tend to look at the strengths and the resilience of people, and mostly Native women, who have kept cultures and practices alive through songs and storytelling and different ceremonies that we share and some we don't share. So that's where our focus has been. It's been really positive.
Okay. Great. That's good to hear. And, you know, again, such important work that, you know, is needed to be done. And like you say, sharing that narrative, because, you know, often, you know, voices, or at least Indigenous voices, are underrepresented or, you know, unheard. So it's really important for us to allow for that space. And I think Indigenous Peoples Day, you know, really is a time to elevate that voice and to, you know, bring people in who can share, you know, that sort of history. And sometimes it does involve things like, you know, historical trauma. But, you know, those are realities that, you know, we learn from and we heal from And here at San Juan College, you know, we are an institution that also recognizes and celebrates Indigenous Peoples Day. So, you know, within, you know, that we couldn't fit, you know, all of our educational opportunities in one day. We kind of spread it out throughout the week and just had different things going on throughout the week to represent Indigenous voices. So that's true and definitely very important. So, you know, it's really nice to hear, you know, from, you know, what things that are going on there. And as you say, you know, some places are a little behind the game than others, but that doesn't mean, you know, there isn't progress happening. So it's really good to hear, you know, where we are going, you know, kind of in the right direction in terms of, you know, sharing that narrative and then, you know, allowing people to really express their voice. So thank you for that. And then can you also just quickly talk about the American Indian Community House in New York City? So what is its overall existence and what is your, I mean, how do you feel about your involvement there?
Yes, so the American Indian Community House is I don't want to say it's the only, but it's definitely one of the few urban centers that provide limited programs and services and referrals, support services for state and federally recognized natives who are enrolled in their tribes. If they aren't enrolled, it's not that they're turned away. It's just that a lot of the funding is supported by Indian Health Services. And so the function is to be a space for Native peoples to gather and have a sense of community, and they provide drumming circles, provide child care at different events, social gatherings, and for the organizing and advocacy work regarding the addressing the Columbus monuments, we've been able to host meetings there, and they've been generous with sharing their platforms on social media with advertising and welcoming different people from backgrounds across the spectrum into this space to support natives. And it's really important that we have a not only like a physical space, but just a place where native peoples can come and see each other and just be together and not always feel the need to explain who we are and educate everyone else, but just be around like our own people. And so that's what the work has been in my experience. Uh-huh. I've enjoyed going there for different film screenings and food gathering events. And
nice.
Yeah. So what the focus recently has been has included looking at ways in which the community house and primarily the young Native professionals, Native women leaders, how we're organizing amongst ourselves to address the commissioner's position. That what the commissioner is doing is creating recommendations to then send to the city, that being Mayor de Blasio and other elected officials in the Landmarks and Parks Department. So that will all be overseen by the mayor's office as to whether or not a decision will be made and if that decision is to remove the Columbus statue. And I think it's very important that Native voices are heard and focused on and centered.
Okay, great. Nice. Thank you so much, Noelle. I appreciate you sharing your voice and as well sharing all of the work that you're doing there in New York City. Is definitely, you know, very important work and to show that, you know, diversity in New York City because it's there. You know, being Indigenous and being Native American in New York City is something I think that is very powerful. And so thank you for the work that you're doing with that. And it's so great to hear about, you know, the work that is being done through the mayor's office and then as well officially through the city. So with that, I do want to thank you for your time, Noelle. I really appreciated you making your time to talk to us about this very serious issue. I'll leave on that note. Okay, thank you so much, and you enjoy
Thank
the
you
rest
for having
of your
me.
Day. So that was Noelle Eldaha sharing her voice out of Brooklyn in New York City. Noelle, as mentioned, is a White Mountain Apache, and she's currently working with the New York City American Indian Community House. So we definitely appreciated, you know, their involvement in listening to some of the things that were going on there. I just want to thank all my guests for joining me today. Ayla Quinn, a producer at Industry Index. Megan Tom, a Diné student at Arizona State University. And again, Noelle Eldaha. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining me today. And then as well, I want to thank you for listening. If you, you know, want to stay involved in the dialogue that's happening, I posted, you know, a lot of the information about these shows and these topics on my own, personal Facebook page. As well, I'm the director here of the Native American Center at San Juan College, so we can engage there if you want to continue, you know, dialogue, if you want to give input about some of these topics that we talked about today. With that, enjoy your Friday. Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening.